Oh, anyway, this is the one and only Back to the 80s radio show. And I am Toscano. We are here introducing the 80s to a whole new generation, reminiscing on the memories that made that generation the best. Ladies and gentlemen, we're here every single Friday for you and for us, reminding you to please like our fake book. Like our fake book. That too. Say it slow. Say it slow. Like our Facebook page, where you can drop us a note and let us know what topics from the 80s you would like to hear. We also want to remind you guys to be a part of our Patreon page at patreon.com/backtothe80s. All that we ask is that you subscribe to our show. Leave us a comment on any platform that you listen to, because it helps. It does help us out. With me today, as he is every single Friday, is a man that goes to malls and just hangs out at Sbarro's waiting for the 80s to come back once again. His collection of members-only jackets can only be seen on display at the Smithsonian Museum. But here at Back to the 80s Radio, we call him The Chang. How the heck are you, my friend?
Well, my brother, my partner in crime, I am always at the top of my game. And yes, my collection of members-only jackets are not all mine. No, no, no. I went through the high school lockers and stole as many members-only jackets at Montebello High School. I did that. I did that all by myself.
Did you know, Chang, that the members-only jackets have never stopped being in production? They still make them, and they still sell them.
Are you serious?
And not only, yeah, absolutely. And I actually saw somebody on TV, a millennial, wearing a bright yellow one to go with his outfit.
Wow. Now, I have not seen a bright yellow members-only jacket since my uncle was alive, and he used to sport a yellow, a very light, kind of a pastel yellow, members-only jacket.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. Yeah.
And I recall going, Uncle Vic, you know I love you. Well, yes, mijo. But why the hell are you wearing such a hideous-looking jacket? And the question to you, Toscano, and all our listeners, members only, but
yeah,
they were sold in such an abundance, there couldn't have been a
stores?
Club. Yeah.
Who, no.
How could you get a membership by wearing this ugly jacket? Is that the whole pitch of members only?
However, let's be honest, all right? Anybody who's ever worn a members only jacket can tell. I mean, this is a fact. Those jackets are some of the most comfortable jackets known to man.
Mm.
Come on, let's be honest. They are some of the most comfortable, and comfort-wise, the most comfortable jackets ever made.
Well,
we gotta give me that one at least.
Well, I'll give you that one now. The Chang never sported a members-only jacket. Now, remember, I told you on a past show, an aunt gave me a members-only jacket, and I felt like slapping
her. Lying, ladies and gentlemen.
I just felt like smacking her. I was like, "Do you understand? I've got long hair. I'm a rocker. I don't wear members-only jackets, and I don't wear windbreakers like the Fonzie. No, I don't."
We have a fantastic show today, and if you just joined us, we're going to be talking about the music industry. What the heck is going on with it? And we're going to be talking to Victor Levine from Force Field Studios in Los Angeles, producer, studio manager, engineer, and much more. So stick around, because Back to the 80s Radio is coming right back.
We're coming for your heads and your soul.
Thought the 80s were lame? That's because we hadn't lived through this decade yet.
You're listening to Back to the 80s.
Welcome back to Back to the 80s. You are listening, hopefully with a friend, if not a friend, a family member. Tonight we are going to talk about music of the past and the present, to a certain degree, because our show is not about the present. And bear with me, but a lot of the music nowadays sucks. All in all, in a handbasket, Toscano, I want to bring up a topic, and this is very dear to my heart, okay, and I'm sure it's very dear to your heart. Now, what is the ridiculousness of the Hall of Fame of Rock and Roll? Why is it that we are seeing more artists that are not of the rock and roll genre being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when we've had such great bands that have not even gotten enough votes to be grinned upon? this last induction election, Iron Maiden was not put in it, but yet the Foo Fighters were nominated, which personally, I think the Foo Fighters are not that great of a band. I think they're a little bit poppy, and I think they're a little bit too modern to even be thought of to join the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, come on, bro. It's a hall of shame, not a hall of fame, and it has nothing to do anymore with the term rock and roll. Would you not agree?
You know, as with recent years, once again, the fan voted ballot hasn't reflected the final outcome. You know, for metal fans and real rock fans, here we go again. Iron Maiden, left out. Left out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Judas Priest, left out. Once again, left out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What happened with other members of bands? Of, let's go back to bands from the 70s and 80s, of course. One of those bands in particular, now, regardless of whether you like them or not, this is not about what we like or not. It's about justice to these bands, because there have been tons of bands sitting on the sidelines since the 80s, and they've been left sucking their thumb. And one of those bands is Motorhead. Metallica's induction makes the omission even more glaring, since they've never hid Motorhead's huge influence on their music. You know, the late Lemmy, brilliant mixing of punk and metal with a double bass kick drum to keep things, you know, charging forward, still sounds brand new. Come on. Then we've got Iron Maiden, which have never having crossover hit. It seems to have doomed Iron Maiden from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And this is something that really ticks me off. And then you have bands like Pantera, Judas Priest, and guess what, bro? Megadeth not in there. And then, of course, Ronnie James Dio, you know? Yeah, he was a legend, but you know what? He sang for Black Sabbath, so, you know, since Black Sabbath's already in, oh well, you know, Ronnie James Dio doesn't deserve to be there. And bands like V52s and some other bands. Now, like I said, regardless if I don't like them or not, it's not about that. It's about these are great bands that have meant so much to the world of music. They have sold over 100 million albums. I mean, come on. And they're not there.
You know, talking about that, Chaka Khan being brought up into the mix is not rock. The other one that really bothers me, and I know a lot of our listeners may get mad, the Go-Go's. I'm sorry, but the Go-Go's to me did not... how could I word this without pissing anybody off?
Here, I'll say it. Deserve?
The Go-Go's in no way, shape, or form deserve to be called a rock and roll band. They were a pop band. I mean, I can't understand the reasoning, the logic that these people are voting these bands in. And like I said, the Foo Fighters, I just don't call them a hard rock band. I'm sorry, I just don't. You know, I look at Dave Grohl and I was like, yeah, you're the guy that was in Nirvana. Okay. But I just find it preposterous. I think it's ridiculous. Now, I read an article earlier today where even Gene Simmons of Kiss, and you know I'm not a big fan of Gene Simmons, the Donald Trump of hard rock, but even he thought it was disgusting that such great rock and roll bands have been overlooked.
Right.
And in their place, pop culture has put their groups in. LL Cool J. I can't even stand that watching him on that L.A. cop show with the guy that played Robin in the weakest Batman and Robin of all time, Chris O'Donnell. I mean, come on.
This is not about the genres that we like or not. It's not about that. It's about an entity, an agency being called Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, okay? That is a particular genre that includes many subgenres within it. However, rap is not in there. Okay, it shouldn't be.
Right.
Just like classical music should not be in there because it's not rock and roll.
Country music is another.
Correct. Country music should not be in there because it's not rock and roll. Now, regardless, we can all say, you know what? Well, the roots of it are rock and roll. The roots are probably somewhere jazz or somewhere in the medieval times. And we're not going to just go back to playing that kind of music. It's not about that. And then you get, look, who was the other one? Jay-Z. Give me a break. I mean, give me a break. And then you got artists, of course, like Ozzy Osbourne, right? Although in his situation, there were some personal issues because he attempted to remove Black Sabbath's name from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nomination in 1999. He called it meaningless, all right? So, you know, he probably has what is coming to him. But what about, let's go with other bands who've expressed, you know, no interest. However, deep down inside, come on, these are bands that would love to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they deserve it. Such bands as Scorpions, that has sold over 100 million albums worldwide, headlining performances for over the last 40 years. Slayer, Sammy Hagar, okay, who had 2 platinum, 1 gold-selling album even before joining Van Halen, and then 3 more top 25 solo projects afterward. My question is, bro, who is making the rules? Who are these people that they are allowing to vote? Because whoever it is know nothing about rock and roll.
Oh, I agree. And I'm going to go on a limb and I'm going to call anybody that is being utilized to vote for the inductees to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I call these guys a bunch of brain dead ass clowns. Yes, you can bleep me out if you want, but I'm going to stand by that. It's just ridiculous. You know, rock and roll was one of the first sounds that came out here in the States. And if you remember, we go all the way back, brother. We go all the way back to great bands like Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard. You know, some say Elvis Presley isn't really the king of rock and roll, that he did steal the rock and roll vibe and sound from the black musical culture. But Chuck Berry, I mean, such greats like that started rock and roll. And then you have the Fab Four and the Who and the Rolling Stones and such great bands that came in to the rock and roll scene and created the rock and roll scene to what we have today.
When the Country Music Awards come out, all right, and they were to give their award to Jay-Z or LL Cool J, how would the rest of the artists feel? How would the fans of country music feel? It's not going to happen, right? So why is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame allowing it? I'm going to tell you why. Because they suck. And you know what? I am no fan of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have let me down one too many times. Bands that have been on the sidelines for 40 years, man, and they're not in there. And here comes an artist that's not even in the genre of rock and roll and wins it. And they barely started in the 90s, bro. Where's the justice in that? Give me a break.
They've even brought up Rage Against the Machine, which to me, I like Rage Against the Machine. I'm a hard rock kind of guy. Now, I do dig their music, but it's way too early for them to be nominated. It's way too early for them to even be discussed. As a matter of fact,
correct.
Bruce Dickinson was not surprised correct. That they were not inducted. And he said even if they were, his band would not attend because they feel the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a mere joke. That's bottom line.
It is a joke, and it's just a disgrace to all rock bands who've tried and have sold and have proved and have gathered and gained a reputation of who they are, a great band, and it's just a disgrace and an embarrassment to everybody who loves real rock and roll. This is Back to the 80s Radio. We're going to be right back. Here's John Sells, Wild Dreams in July, only on Back to the 80s Radio.
Dim the light so that you might spread your wings and fly. Find your love tonight. Half awake, made the same mistake. It's yours to take, but you can't wait. All alone when it comes undone.
gone and you're holding out. Don't you take too long. Reverie, won't you let me be? Can you see yourself standing next to me?
Wild Dreams in July by John Sayles, Warren Ryder on vocals, James Stroud on drums, Kathy McKee on harmony vocals. Catch your copy of John Sayles at forcefieldstudios.com. You're listening to Back to the 80s Radio. I'm Toscano from Toscano and Chang. And if you've just joined us, I want to thank you guys for making Back to the 80s Radio part of your day. And want to keep motivating you guys to head on over to our Facebook page, join the group as well, and please interact with others. Leave us your pictures, your comments. If there's anything that you guys want us to talk about here on the show, we'd be more than glad and happy to do it. So leave us those comments. It means so much to us. You know, we were talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we're going off on a rant because of so many bands that have been snubbed out. And, you know, there are bands who you might say, well, they don't belong in the Hall of Fame. So that's okay that they didn't make it. But you know what? Once they start letting other genres come in, everything goes. Wouldn't you say that, Chang?
Oh, I would agree. I mean, like we were talking a couple of seconds ago off air. George Michael, a great talent, right? One of the greatest vocalists, I think, of his day, of his era, of that genre. But even somebody as great with the lyrical content that guy had the range, he doesn't deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because Wham and him weren't rock and roll. I find it preposterous that we even call it a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It should be the Rock and Roll Hall of Shame.
It should be, or it should be just called the Music Hall of Fame, right?
And look how long it took Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble to be inducted, you know?
Yeah.
And
you know, I remember in 2019, when they inducted The Cure, okay?
Now, see, regardless, there's once again, crap band that shouldn't be in there.
But I was going to say, regardless of whether you like them or not, you know, when they interviewed Robert Smith and when he went up there, he was not a happy guy.
No.
Because, and he let everybody know. I mean, he was not happy. No matter, I know they won, but he was not a happy camper because of everything that goes down in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, then we got bands like NXS who don't even have a chance, of course.
I'm so downright pissed off about it every year. I haven't even looked into the scoring issue that they come up with to induct some of these acts. I really don't. I just find it preposterous.
Let's go over some of the performers that have been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Number one, the Foo Fighters, followed by the Go-Go's, Jay-Z, Carole King, Todd Rundgren, Tina Turner, all right? Clarence Avant, LL Cool J, Billy Preston, Randy Rhoads. Wow, there's a good one. Kraftwerk.
Who?
Kraftwerk. I don't know. Gil Scott-Heron or Heron. Charlie Patton.
Who the hell is that? Well, you've been listening to Back to the 80s, Toscano and Chang. We're going to take a quick break here. Coming back, we have our interview with the legendary Victor Levine.
Hey, if you listen to rock and roll radio in the 80s, then listen to this. Toscano and Chang. They will transport you back in time, back to the 80s.
If they were a laxative, they'd be so powerful, you could stand on your head and shit on the ceiling.
That position would not only be unavailing, but also undignified.
And now, back to the 80s with Toscano and Chang.
This is Back to the 80s Radio. This is Toscano from Toscano and Chang. I want to keep reminding you guys to stick around with us because Toscano and Chang and the madness that we bring to you is coming up every single Friday, but soon to be K-Hits 92.5 online and around the world. Now, as promised before the break, we have a very, very special guest from Force Field Studios, Victor Levine, who is Of course, among other things, a business insider, studio manager, producer, engineer, songwriter, musician. How do you have the time to even spare some time for us?
Mario, it's a pleasure to be on, and I thank you. And I'm so happy that you're following the 80s because it was a terrific time, a whole fountain of creativity. And I never get tired of listening to the music, honestly.
Well, it's great to have you, Victor. How do you remember the music industry of the 80s?
It was really kind of exciting because technologically, I've owned equipment for so long that I tend to follow the storyline of the electronics. And from I bought a reel-to-reel tape recorder and had it in my bedroom when I was 13. So when the equipment got more sophisticated and the Porta Studio started in the 70s, actually, and the tools eventually became put into the hands of the creators. And that's what happened in the 80s, because now instead of having to go to, when I first had a studio, you wanted to make a demo, you had to come to a studio. When the 80s started, everybody had their own Porta Studio, then the drum machines came in, then the synthesizers became affordable. So it was really an explosion of talent because everybody had access to the equipment. And a lot of trends followed in that, and the record companies got on board, and that's when individual, what we have today, you know, everybody makes a project and uploads on Spotify or something. But then that was when that first started becoming feasible, and it was really the end to record sound on sound.
Yes, exactly. Now, Victor, I have a question, and it's kind of in the same grounds. And we're talking about the music industry and the different styles, genres. Even the talent, I believe, has changed dramatically from the early 70s and the 80s. I always consider the 80s as the floodgate of music. We had so many diverse bands, so much different talent, but it was sheer raw talent. I think MTV killed the radio, and I will stand by that. Would you not say that the talent pool in today's music is very shallow in comparison to some of the musical talent that we have had in the past? And I ask you this question because you, sir, were directly in the middle of the swimming pool of so much talent hitting you. It was probably hard to keep track of and hard to contain to get these artists in the studio and play nice and play professional to bring out such great music.
I'm really glad that you asked me that, because it's really important here to define what you mean by work with. So as a studio operator, my job was to keep the studio going. And I was very careful to be in the sessions and not in the sessions at the right time. Most of the time, as in 90 some odd percent of the time, my job was to be out of the session in my office, taking care of business so that everything worked. And especially at Amigo, where I had 7 rooms online and 15,000 square feet to manage, and, you know, going night and day, there was a lot going on. So in terms of being in the studio, what my kind of creative part of my agenda, because like everybody else that I really met in the studio world, they started out as a musician, of course, and realized that, you know, being in front of the camera on stage wasn't going to be their destiny. So they veered off in a different direction. So I had a fellow that I grew up with who was in the career world. And over time, when I had studio time, we would go in and record and do work on stuff for him. That guy is John Sells. And over the period of 20 and 30 years, he put out records with other people. And when he passed, I put in all this time, but, you know, he couldn't stay straight, basically. He was a wonderful guy, but he just couldn't do it. And so I was left with all his material. And so I said, what am I going to do? Am I going to throw it away? I put a lot of work into this. So I started developing it. And over time, so that's the focal point. But besides that, I've worked with, over the years, Randy California was a pretty good friend of mine from Spirit. And I did wrote and did demos with him, not an amigo, at Fidelity. Greg Reeves from Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, Reeves, and Taylor. Greg and I did some stuff together. I worked with Mila Jovovich. The, you know, I got her. She came to us. As a, I got her. I did her demos. And
now, I didn't. I didn't even know that she sang.
Well, she didn't. She was like, when we when she came to me and my management partner. She was about 15. She kind of had this modeling career, and
right.
But she was she had Russian. Her mother was a Russian actress, very dramatic person, and she Mila was very dramatic and passionate. And then she had this poetry, and so they kind of somehow or other they showed us the poetry, and I went with her and I showed her how we wrote our first songs together. And then we got her a record deal and a publishing deal, and she, you know, but she was already had a, this other kind of career. So, you know, that was a big, you know, thing for me. But in terms of circling back with like the gold records I have, like behind me, I'll take a picture of it. I've got, you know, the David Lee Roth. This is in Amigo. There was Amigo. Amigo existed for quite some time. I told you I could go on for a long time. Amigo was bought by Warner Brothers a year or two after Snuff Garrett started it. And over the years, it was their studio, and we had they had a mastering studio there too, two mastering studios. So there was recording and mastering and a huge tape library. And the Warner Brothers, and it was on the comm line to the Warner Brothers building. What happened, the history of Amiga, which I thought, because, you know, when I heard your podcast, Chang, and I heard you reeling off these names, I was like, wait a minute. I knew every one of those bands. We did all of those demos. And you know, it was just like that kind of, I told Mario, one of my attractions to the show was his voice. And one of my attractions to you is I thought, like, you know, you were around during those times. So I'm sure that somehow we could connect on some level. I have one for you, okay? Frankie Finelli, the drummer for Quiet Riot, he recently died. So anyhow, so I was producing this, there's this artist named David Della Rosa, who was, you know, basically a fringe, talented fringe, you know, but he was really good. So somehow or other, between his brother and Frankie somehow liked him. And they wanted to put together and make a record and had a different studio. I had Crystal Studios at the time. They wanted to make a record, but of course, nobody really had any money. So what we used to do, what was very common in the recording business, is that when people who had somehow been anointed geniuses were there, the habit was for the engineer to spool up the tape and just let it run. Don't press start and stop because you'd interrupt the genius. So the tapes just ran and ran and ran and ran. Well, the tapes cost about $175 a piece, these 2-inch tapes. So it wasn't for nothing. So in the studio world, you would find tapes with like basically nothing on it, or like 2 seconds of a drum track, or somebody coughing and noodling around. And then eventually, you know, they'd figure out what they wanted to record. And that would be the take that they'd use to do the rest of the overdubs on. But reeling back to the beginning of the story, we didn't have any money for tape to record this, you know, fringe artist, David Della Rosa. So I went into the tape library and I found some tapes that like, that somebody had recorded on, which somebody really famous had recorded on, but they didn't make any sounds, you know, it was like nothing, and I knew that they were never coming back for it. So that's what we used to make his record. Erased what was on there, and we had a fresh roll of tape.
No, that's awesome. In your opinion, two major differences, one or two, between how music was produced back then in the 80s than it is today, and do those differences make any difference for the listener today? Is it better now? And I don't mean technologically. I mean everything else behind the scenes. Or was it better back then for whatever the reason?
Great questions. And There's a lot of differences. The primary difference is the migration of the equipment from needing to work with multiple people versus working by yourself. And this is something I've actually written about, I write to. But the idea is that in the 80s, if you wanted to make a record and you wanted to get signed to a record deal, and one group that I was very involved with, I'm sorry, Chang, now I remember, is Reverend David Wayne. And so a typical journey in the 80s to get to a record deal was you had this guy, David Wayne, who was the lead singer of Lords of the New Church, which is the first grunge band out of Seattle. He came down and somehow record executive Danny Goldberg, I think, Danny something, I can't remember, Goodwin, Danny Goodwin at Charisma Records. And at the time, I was doing a lot of demos for people. And at the time, I had a deal, and Suicidal Tendencies did this deal, Poison did this deal. I made a list of all the people because it was like a thing, and I called it the 3-4-5 deal. It was 3 songs, 4 days, $5,000, and I sold a lot of packages. But what happened is the labels called me up with a project because my skill was knowing which engineer or producer to put it together who knew the system that we could get a result and get some demos, real demos, viable demos. So this was typical at the time. And we had many acts, including Suicidal Tendencies, go to deal like this. And so at the time, you know, I get sent this tape from the record guy, and it was just, and it's a tape of them in a rehearsal, and that's where it started. It had to be the band live in rehearsal, and the tape sounded so bad that I remember I said to him, I called him back, and he said, what'd you think of it? I said, well, to be honest with you, it sounds like somebody taped a microphone to the back of an air conditioner. And we had a really good laugh about it. And I said, but I got just the engineer who will know how to deal with this. So I brought in my top guy, Croyle, who's gone to all kinds of other things. He's a great guy, very talented. And that was the start of Reverend's first demo. And then that went to record deal, and they made 4 albums, and we wound up managing them because, you know, they trusted us. So that was the 80s. Today, the whole world has shifted so that, from what I understand, and it's shifted to a point where I'm only a spectator from a distance. But today, all the tools to make all those sounds, and even to make all the visuals, are in the hands of everybody with a smartphone. So what you have is, And better is a relative term, because what you have is that people now, their typical attention span is short. So what are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to something that's fast and moving like them. And that's why TikTok is so popular, and, you know, all the other, you know, fast platforms. I mean, on my opinion, that's very much in this culture. We have a lot of fans. I mean, a lot of our fans, most of our fans are in the rest of the world, because the rest of the world still actually listens to music.
Yeah. We know what you mean, because the same thing happens with back to the 80s. The majority of the countries listening to us still listen to real music. And by real music, I just mean the way that you were, you know, without speeding up, without wanting to go on to the next thing 15 seconds into it.
Yeah, or 5 seconds into it. I mean, K-pop is really, it's an amazing thing. You know, like I said, I could talk for a long time about it, but anyhow, just giving you guys some ideas. If you want to follow up on any of these, we can, you know, do it by email or another phone call, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. But like K-pop and TikTok are really the leading edge of things. But to me, the music is only a component of it. You know, so it's not really music.
It's not the star of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So realistically, and I think the importance of the music of the 80s which is why I think that if your show is very exciting, is that if you, all of the styles from hip hop to synth pop to grunge, all of those things really are represented in the 80s. Everything. Because that was when it became technologically possible to do all that stuff. Even auto-tune and the whole thing. So the 80s are really, they're really like the flowering of all the styles.
You know, it's interesting because I have one of my nephews who is in his mid-20s, you know, a college graduate with today's mentality and only likes today's things and whatever. So he mentioned to me a while back ago during a little family get-together, he goes, do you realize you're just repeating what your parents said to you about their music? And I said, well, actually, let's think about it. It's not really true because today's music, it's not anything that you haven't heard before, as opposed to the 80s, where all that music, the glam metal, the hair metal, the beginnings of thrash and all that stuff was new to us. There wasn't anything like it before. So that's why it will go on forever, as opposed to today where you have 500 million singers that go to X Factor and America's Got Talent and all these talent shows that you'll never hear from again.
As Mario brought up that was a great point, bro. Now, this is where it gets crazy, where both me and Mario are on the same page and we've discussed this. Now, I think seeing that the 80s were so close to the 70s, where we had such great music as Motown, where we had the rock that was not classified as classic, but as acid rock with Aerosmith, Judas Priest, you know, great bands like UFO, Thin Lizzy, yeah, Steely Dan, the Eagles, Linda Ronstadt. I think that the 80s talent kind of flowered from the early 70s, late 70s seeds that were planted in music. And I think with the decade change and the time that has passed, the talent of music now has been a lot more watered down. Then we go back into the 80s, and like Mario said, you know, the evolution of the grunge, of thrash metal, of glam metal, which I call pretty metal, poser boys, but what that's on another show. I think we are so far in the music industry with talent from when the necessity hit in the early, late 70s, that has added to, I think, a cheapening of music nowadays. And I also think that's why terrestrial radio is pretty much got one foot in the grave and the other one in the urn. What would your take be on that?
You're 100% right, and I agree with you that the talent pool is what I call talent. The musical talent pool, I believe, is a lot shallower in pop music, and there's some very good reasons why. And the principal one is that you don't actually need to learn how to play an instrument. And as somebody who's got calluses for days, who still plays, who's practiced, and I'm multi-instrumentalist, I can play a lot of instruments. When somebody says, oh, you want a bass sound? Here, doink, doink, doink. Now I'm a bass player. You know, and so the idea, you know, to me, the dividing line is, are they a musician or are they using music to create sound? Which is a valid thing. It's fine. But to me, I'm a musician and I prefer music. And, you know, I guess that's so. And I think that, and in the 80s, I'll tell you a little side story for that one. When I was recording with Cells in Los Angeles, he, you know, was dating somebody, which was a frequent, you know, affair, good last for at least a day or two. Anyhow, so he says, I said, well, how was your date last night? He says, oh, it's okay. She says, right. Yeah, but she told me she was a bass player. And so we went over and like I gave her, she brought her bass over and like, I thought we were going to jam. But she didn't know any notes. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I told her, I said, let's play in the key of E. And she says, what's that? And he says, you know, like the E string. She goes, huh? And then he says, and you know, you could play. Right. And then the third fret is a G. And she's like, well, why do I need to know that? So that to sure. me, like, I can't contest that. And that, and those are the people that actually have had success. These people who are not talented. There was another group, if you want to go back to the early 80s, it's called The Fools. The Fools. And Simone Postuma, this Dutch guy, was the front man for it. Simone is a famous character because he brought the colors of Morocco and influenced the Beatles. Anyhow, this is a long story. I go back a long way, I'll warn you. So he was just like this cool guy who would influence the Beatles. So they said, naturally, let's make a recording group out of it. He wasn't a musician. He was like this thing, you know, a public thing. And so that was at the time, everybody was like, had their eye up, like, what the heck is this? You know, but it worked because he was cool. He actually was cool. But today, people are just, posing. Posing used to be a pejorative, as we say. Right. it's really different. But there's a lot of talented people. The basic answer is that in the 80s you still had to actually learn how to play an instrument in order to call yourself a musician. You have to be able to carry a tune to call yourself a singer.
Now that we're on the subject, real brief on the technological side of it, or the hardware side. If you, for a second, go back to records, cassettes, CDs versus streaming. As a producer, okay, this is nothing to do as the listener, but as the producer, in your opinion, what would be the closest thing in the recording studio to the real thing in front of you?
You know what? It's a very fair question. It's a great question. And the answer is going to surprise you. It depends on the engineer. Because a good engineer can make crap sound good, and a bad engineer can't make a need sound like a, you know, anything. So, but in general, and I've been there for the analog digital wars for a long time. In general, analog has a warmer sound, and it's a more natural sound, and people, you know, biological creatures like humans tend to like it.
You're aware that vinyl is making its presence, and the technology of vinyl has gotten a lot better. What's your take on the rebirth of vinyl and the sound that vinyl put out then as comparison to the sound it puts out now?
Yes, of course. And again, it's so great that you appreciate sound quality. And sound quality has, to streaming, I'll tell you something about streaming that a lot of people are unaware of, is that all streaming is not created equal. Spotify streams at a much lower bit rate than Amazon Prime. And as a result, and they're constantly changing, and, you know, there's all the compression. So the signal path to your ear is long and complicated. When I upload tracks and all the distributors still want everything in 1644. So, you know, so 44 bit, you know, so, you know, 44K. So it's the listening experience can be improved at any level, and getting a good pair of headphones, getting a good cassette deck, getting a good original medium. I'm friends with a guy who's, I own lathes. So I actually know about cutting lacquer. So this fellow who's still working now, he's up in the mountains. I digitized some tapes, and I had some of my 2-inch was really dicey. So I brought it to him, and he baked them just the right way and was able to digitize them. What he said, in his opinion, and this is like, he's way past me, and I'm a studio guy. So he said that the order is cassettes, CDs are the worst quality, followed by tape, and the highest quality is acetate. So that's the pecking order. And so your ears are not deceiving you.
It's like the Pepsi and the Coke challenge then.
You're listening to Back to the 80s. If you just joined us, we have Victor Levine, and we're going to be back with more Back to the 80s radio, Toscano and Chang, and possibly a hater.
Back to the 80s.
Let me explain something to you. I am a vintage, mass-marketed children's toy from the 80s.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and kitties, and all you 80s ladies. We are sitting here chatting away with the legend, that's right, the legend, Victor Levine, and we're talking about 80s production. This guy is all over. I read over so many acts that you worked with, and a question comes to mind. This was one of my favorite slash punk slash metal bands, Suicidal Tendencies. What was it like to work with this band? And could you maybe explain a little bit to our listeners who may not be familiar or who don't understand why I gave them the slash metal punk rock rating? Could you dive into a couple of stories that you might have of Mike and the Boys?
Yeah. Happy to talk about Suicidal Tendencies. And the first thing is that they were one of a couple of bands. There was Thrill Kill Cult, Faster Pussycat,
yep.
Rat, Poison, I think we did their demo. So they came in, and the idea was that they came to Amigo Studios because Amigo Studios had developed a reputation where Metallica had cut Master of Puppets.
Oh yes, a great album.
And Michael Wagner, and I got the record behind me. So, and Michael Wagner was the engineer producer, and he had a string of hits there. We did Dokken, we did White Lion, and so in between there, all the up and coming acts like Suicidal Tendencies and the labels were the one that kind of said, hey, you go work over there, they'll figure out what to do. So Suicidal Tendencies wasn't that noticeable to me from my vantage point of the office where I generally stayed for my own well-being. you know, I wasn't exactly a Suicidal Tendency guy. I'm married my whole life, and, you know, I needed to make the equipment work. So, you know, I was very polite and everything, but I'm not like hanging out drinking beers with them. So anyhow, which is a funny story, because I remember that they were in Studio A. And by the way, I have all the documentation from my years at Amigo, 4 years of every, I have a desk log and a night log and the booking calendar of everything that went on. So, I'll talk to you about that sometime. But anyhow, I told everybody, all the second engineers and everybody who worked at my desk, which was manned night and day for 4 years, they had to fill out the day log or the night log and say what happened, who did what, money in, food runs, whatever. So anyhow, this is how I would keep an eye on what was going on. I'd read, it's like, okay, who's in, what time did they get out, how much, you know, was their billing and the engine, you know, it's like business. And so what I remember is the Suicidal Tendencies, I think they were tracking, and we were doing some kind of construction. And in the course of the construction, there was a toilet that had been removed and set aside on the hallway next to their control room. And I guess in a fit of maybe they got lost at night or whatever, but that they you know, we've discovered that they had used the toilet, and so I was not really happy. I don't know if I and that's what I remember about him. And I said, and I remembered the band. I said, that's a good name for these guys. I mean, they're in a beautiful studio, and they go in the hallway and take a crap in the thing, but, you know, just saying.
Let's talk a little bit about radio, because that is our world, And from what it was to the 80s to what happened in the 90s and today, in order for it to get to a point where it's once again with that same spirit that it had in the 80s, what, in other words, what would it take to make radio fun and exciting again, in your opinion?
Personalities like yourself and creative.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Both of you guys, creative, passionate, knowledgeable people who want to connect. We actually are connected to radio stations all over the world now, and you guys more resemble the world model of people who just are telling the truth, believing what they say, and going with it, and not trying to please all the people all the time, just being real. So you guys have, I've heard your skits. I like radio. My wife, Catherine, she started out as a radio producer, produced the big talk show down in San Diego, every day. So we're way into radio. And to change point about MTV, I got to say, I agree with it to some extent, because music used to be something you listened to. Now it's something that you watch, which, it's just an entirely different thing to me.
Why do you think that terrestrial radio has taken the dive that it has? Would you say
Clear
it's
Channel?
A mixture of the... I was just going to say that, Cumulus. I was going to ask you, do you actually believe, like I do, corporate America and their greedy little hands stopped caring about the product and it was more about the revenue? And they tried to water down and cheapen the airwaves by giving everybody less music, popular, kind of the same structure of music, and they don't pay attention to radio personalities anymore. Now, me, I grew up sworn to the radio. The radio was everything to me, and I grew up listening to KMET, KLOS. I am a KNAC listener. I grew up listening to K-West. I remember listening to The Real Dawn Steele on AM radio at 93KHJ, and I remember I looked at my mom and my dad, and I said, that's what I effing want to do when I'm a big boy. Music and radio to me are very, I hold them to my heart, and I know my buddy will attest to this. I really firmly believe that music and humor are the greatest entities of all mankind that can bring anyone of any color, sexual preference, religion together at one place at one time, and that is harmony. I firmly believe that only through unity are we going to create prosperity. And I think with the dying era of radio that we see, and the accumulation of so many networks that are just going to go ahead and let you download music, you miss that neighborhood window that brings both jock and listeners all together with not even being in the room together.
Chang, I hear you, but I have some good news for you. The proliferation of internet-based radio, which we are on hundreds of stations worldwide, is the antidote to the problems that you just correctly described. And the idea that corporate America is taking something and just trying to make it into a plastic replication factory of itself and squeeze out profit. That's what business often does, and it's not limited to the record business. And what the antidote is, Toscano and Chang.
Victor, it's been a pleasure to have you with us, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we went a little overboard, but it's always when you have a great in the room, there's nothing better than to pick from that great mind.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for doing what you're doing. You've got a good vibe going, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And call me again. We'll talk more. I'm sorry I'm so long-winded, but, I've survived that long enough that that's a lot of blah, blah, blah. So.
Keep rocking. Thanks a lot, Victor.
If you don't mind, I may steal some of your words, something that I think is very apropos for the moment. But to all 80s fans listening, in spite of the many dramatic and heartfelt and sometimes tragic moments in different people's lives, always try to remember that there are only two things in the universe that matter, the ones that matter and the ones that don't, and the ability to distinguish the difference, to keep it all in perspective, to laugh as much as possible.